Hi everyone, welcome to the Set Python Girls Club podcast. I am your host, Madeline.
And I'm your co-host, Luciana. Let's get started. Hello everyone, welcome to the third episode of the Set Python Girls Club podcast. I am here today with my co-host, Madeline. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Luciana, how are you?
I am doing well as well. And today we have another special guest, Kartik, who is an engineer in our team. Hello, Kartik.
Hello, the both of you. How are you guys?
We are well. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's really excited to be on this podcast.
We are very excited to be here with you. Can you tell everyone about yourself a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So Microsoft was my first rodeo out of college back in India. So I joined Microsoft Vancouver. It has been about 3-4 years ago. So I met my wonderful team there, Brett, Luciana, Derek, Dawn. Actually, it's a funny story. So the first person I met there was Brett. And as you know, Brett is a member of the Python Steering Council, but I had no idea who he was. There was also this language barrier. It was my first time out of the country and I had a trouble with accents. So maybe he did tell me this or he did not. So basically he was telling me, don't not to get worried. He's just a normal person like me. So don't get intimidated and all. So I was not really getting intimidated, but I am now because I had no idea who he was. And then I later got to know that he was the member of the Python Steering Council. There was Eric, who was also the member of the Python Steering Council. There was Dawn, who is the creator of the extension. And then there's me. So yeah, that did not help. But yeah, I got through it.
Don't be intimidated. But well, now that you're saying, I am intimidated.
Yes, that is right.
That's awesome. And now you're no longer in Vancouver, is that correct?
So Vancouver was supposed to be an 18-month stint. So I spent my time there and basically I eventually moved to Redmond now, where Kartik is the only other team member now here.
We definitely miss you, but we're also happy for you and this new opportunity.
It's funny that you say that you were intimidated by Brett, because actually when I joined the team, I looked up people on LinkedIn kind of. And it turns out Brett was a classmate of one of my former colleagues. And so she was like, oh, you know, Brett, well, say hi from me and stuff like that. And I had no idea where like everybody on the team was. And so when I interviewed with Dawn as well, and he was just a regular team member. And then I learned the layout of the team. And I was like, oh my goodness, so many important people. What am I doing here?
Yeah, exactly. Good to know someone relates to. That feeling never goes away, by the way. It's still there with Guido and everyone else coming in once in a while.
Yeah, and like, there's so many smart people on the team, but you are also on the team. So remember, you are also one of those smart people. Talking about smart stuff, is there anything that you're proud of on your time on the extension?
So initially when I got into engineering, I did it because I loved maths and the problem solving, I loved it. But there were very few to know real world applications of that. So I was really excited when I finally got to join the Python team. So I think I have taken a similar role here, which is to be like a troubleshooter and fix gnarly bugs. So yeah, I'm really proud of fixing those things quickly. And naturally, I gravitated towards the environment component in the extension, which was pretty complicated and buggy. So yeah, I started working on the environment discovery, particularly starting from there.
Pretty complicated and buggy. No shade thrown at Dawn. I won't tell Dawn you sent it. I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. But yeah, so you worked a lot on like the refactoring of the environment discovery component, right? So for people who are listening today, could you give like a quick rundown of like how it was and how it is now?
Yes, sure. So the main issue was that each component seemed to have too many responsibilities. For example, let's take a locator. For example, the workspace locator, it got the interpreters, then it basically, we also ran the Python executable to get information to display, and then we also resolved symlinks, and there were basically a bunch of things going on in every single thing. So because of the bunch of responsibilities, that class or that component had to be imported in so many places. Then it was all like every class was used as so many places, and it was all very intertwined. So there was no telling how many times each component is called, and it was all very strangled. So one of our main concerns was that we needed to separate that out into separate components. So each component has a very specific responsibility, and it's also simple. So that was one of the reasons why discovery was a bit hard to get.
I remember at the time that you were working on the solution, there were a few security concerns that we were talking about as well. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. So basically what happened was in the VS Code perspective was that when a Python file was opened, the Python extension started loading, which triggered discovery on startup by default. So what happened is that, for example, if a user just opened a file to just browse the file, so because we triggered discovery in background, there was a risk of accidentally triggering execution of some code from that repository. So that was also one of the concerns when writing the new discovery code, that we avoid running binaries if we don't need it.
I remember when you added the path to executable, for example, the calculator on Windows, if you open a Python file, it won't launch that because we were just launching whatever was there in the setting.
Yeah.
There was also another issue related to shadowing standard library modules or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. So, for example, if you had a file in your repository with the same name as a standard lib, Python could load it while running linter or discovery, things like that. So that was also a concern. So due to which we had to be mindful of running things at startup. Also, we had to think about that a repository can inject a setting or an environment variable if it's connected to Git. That was also one of the things that played a role. For example, we had the python.pythonpath setting, which used to be by default shareable across repositories. So one of the things that could happen is that if that setting got injected into a repository, it could lead in the running of malicious code as well.
Besides the running of unintended code issues that we have, the refactoring of the environment discovery also like improved the performance of the extension, right? Like it's much faster than before, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. So one of the reasons for that is that every class was running the Python binaries that they found, and they were all running it at the same time. So that led to a lot of CPU load issues and things like that. So now that, for example, with the new code, we now ensure that only one component handles running and getting the information if needed. And that component, we have made it in such a way that it runs things two at a time. So it does not lead to those similar issues. And it's also a lot faster. We had a remote scenario where users were saying that remote connections were breaking SSH connections due to us running a lot of code at the same time. So, for example, things like those, we handle it.
Well, I'm going to pick your brain now, because better now than never. So, okay, this is not a job interview, just saying. I know my questions kind of sound like a job interview, but it is not. So what was your process when you approached this, right? Like if you had any tips for people who need to do a larger scale refactoring like this, or just to give like people insight on how we approach this refactoring, like how did you come up with the design overall?
So the main thing I realized is that if a component A is to be on, is to interact with component B, it should not access the internal APIs of the component B. Instead, component B should be exposing an external API surface, so component A only should be using that instead of just calling to every class of component B. So the main thing we did was that we built each class ground up. So in that way, we could ensure that we are using the correct API surface if another thing which is not related to this class is querying for something. So that was one of the things we learned, that we should build things ground up and use the correct API surface.
It's a good segue, actually, or maybe not a segue, but a good reference to a previous episode with Karthik. So Karthik last time mentioned the ship of Theseus. Are you familiar with the concept?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Okay, well, a quick TLDR is that basically you have a ship, let's say the ship of Theseus, and then you replace every single piece one by one of that ship. So the thing that you end up with at the end, is it still the ship of Theseus? Is it still the old ship or the new ship? And here we're kind of starting to do that with environment discovery, right? Because we had to build the component for the ground up and then replace bits that were interacting with other places. So do you think we're coming up with a brand new extension that just shares the name, or is it still the old extension? There's no right or wrong answer. It's just your opinion.
Yeah. I've heard of that one before. I heard of an example where a person who got injured and he got his like brain replaced or something. So is it the same person? Is it not the same person? I would say it's a brand new extension that we are coming up with.
Speaking about something that was in the old experience and now it's not there, and maybe one of the many reasons why you think it's a completely new extension, Kartik, I believe it's the python.pythonpath setting, which is the old way we used to specify an interpreter to the extension. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. The issue with python.pythonpath setting was, first of all, the name of the setting. So there is also the environment which is called Python path, which means a completely different thing. Users were very confused about that. Another issue with the python.pythonpath setting was that it led to accidental code execution in the repository. So we needed some way to specify the setting but not have it committed in the Git repository as well. So the initial solution we came up with is that we stored the interpreter setting in a VS Code internal storage. So it's not in the repository's folder, but it led to a lot of problems as users were using that setting to know what is the interpreter that extension is using and stuff like that. We were unable to provide the feature parity at just the Python extension level. So eventually we went to VS Code, and so that was one of the motivation for VS Code to come up with the trusted workspaces solution. Users can now browse the code and they can choose to not trust the workspace until they are ready to work with the workspace. So with this solution, we can now still have the setting in the Git control. Now we store the current interpreter setting in the internal storage, but at the same time, users can use a python.default interpreter path, the new setting name, to specify the interpreter which can be used at startup. For example, if you download a new repository, we read from the setting the first time and use that interpreter.
It's interesting because I remember when we had the Python path setting in settings.json, and there were actually a lot of users who were unhappy about it because they were like, it makes it difficult to share the entire repo with like people on your team, right? Because everybody has a different path there.
Yes, that's right. That is also one of the reasons we moved it into the internal storage, so that users can now commit their settings.json file without worrying about the path to their home directory, for instance, appearing in the file.
And what are your future plans for all of these features that you have been working on so far?
For the interpreter path setting, we plan to create a new set of environment APIs which users can fetch the interpreter path setting. And also we are working towards getting a new API ready for discovery, using which users can leverage the new technology for triggering discovery, getting the environments and things like that. So basically, one of the next steps is to expose the environments APIs to the other extension, and that environment API can later be generalized to do execution and activation of environment, stuff like that. Conda activation has also been an issue for us because it uses a lot of environment variables that we need to set and things like that. It's difficult for the other extensions to figure it out on their own as well. So that's also one of the things we are tackling at the moment. Particularly to Conda, I am currently working with the Conda team as well to support execution of files correctly so that the environments are activated correctly and we can execute within those environments.
How are you working with the Conda team specifically?
The initial steps were that we were talking about some of the issues that VS Code faces with Conda. The way Conda works is that it owns the shell. And the issue is that VS Code wants to own the shell as well. For example, for the SSH connections, VS Code injects some variables on path. It makes it easier for the SSH connection to work. And Conda is apparently not very tolerant to those changes. So, for example, things like Conda activation, they work on the external terminal but does not work on the VS Code integrated terminal because of some environment variables which VS Code handles. So there are some differences, things like that. So I was working on the Conda teams to see if we can make the process more tolerant. And Conda also provided us with a new way to run files, which is using Conda run capability. So we, the extension, were one of the first to try it out. So I was also investigating with them regarding a lot of bugs we faced regarding that, although it's pretty good. And it has been working for us to run internal tools like the linters and testing, but it's still not bug-free for the terminal. So we are still working towards that.
When you mentioned that both Conda and VS Code want to have ownership of the shell, the only thing I could think of was Godzilla versus King Kong, and then both of them wanting to have control over it, or I don't know. I mean, you're a WWE fan, so I don't know what kind of headline that could compare to, though.
I'd love to be the referee and and hence I am stuck in between right now. It's in a similar position. But yeah, they have been really good. So we are actively working towards like resolving these issues right now. So one of the things we are doing is that we are attempting to remove the conda activate command. Instead of using the conda activate command to activate the environment, we'll now be setting the environment variables ourselves in the VS Code integrated terminal. So basically, we are taking the responsibility away from conda and doing the activation ourselves. So that would solve part of this problem.
Yeah, we do have more and more conda users. And I guess this is part of like making the extension more robust, more stable, and more future-proof so that we need to be very aware of how users use the extension, right? We used to focus on regular environments, say like virtualenv or pipenv or other environments from other tools, but conda was not a priority for a while, but now we definitely need to focus on it more.
Yes, that is correct. And conda team has also, in the future, they also want to like the possibility of them owning their own conda extension for handling all this stuff. And also, for example, Luciana and Brett are now working on the getting started experience on which conda team is also willing to contribute. So we are on a good track regarding all of these things. And breaking the extension into separate extensions, I am sure Karthik talked about it, but it also separates the responsibility that we were talking about earlier, and it also makes the external contributions easier.
Yeah, I am actually really happy about how really much easier the contributions are for these extensions. Just yesterday, there was a bug that Karthik was trying to debug. I was able to reproduce on my machine. It was with the new Pylint extension. And it's nice because I was able to open the Pylint extension repo on VS Code, edit a few breakpoints, and then I opened a new VS Code window. I created a debug configuration to attach to a process by ID. And then I attached to the process that was running Pylint, and then the debugger just like hit the breakpoint on the Pylint repo, and I was able to like investigate all the lines of code, and we found where it was failing. And it was super cool because, well, I'm a PM. I don't do a lot of coding day to day, but it was great for me to see how easy it is now to really either fix bugs or add new features, and it's now super much easier to contribute to that. So I was very excited.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the things we are doing a lot better now is leveraging the community. So we are one of the lucky products who are open source, and we can actually leverage the community if we have it simplified into smaller bits that the community can work on. So I'm very happy that we are now doing this, and eventually we'll be creating separate extensions and let the community create their own extensions for their own tools, which takes responsibility away from the Python extension itself.
I'm very excited about doing less work, huh? No, but that's also good, right? Because at the end of the day, we are working as a team. So it's also going to be nice to see other people like bring different perspectives and also just see users help build the extension, right? It's a great feeling to see that other people contribute to what you're building.
Yeah, that's right. We are working at a job to put us out of our jobs, kind of.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? We should build a product so that people don't need us to keep it running, right? You don't want to be the bottleneck.
Yeah. So the last thing I plan to work on is improving auto selection. So that's the feature that's coming up. So for example, if a user has not specified an interpreter that is for the workspace, we do the auto selection ourselves. So we want to know the environments which are related to the workspace. We only want to select those environments which are related to the workspace. So currently it's hard to know that. There are tools coming up which are better at letting us know about that. For example, for virtual and wrapper, there is no way to figure out which environment was created for the workspace. But for pip and poetry, we can eventually do that. So that's also the next direction we are coming up with. It's too intense, discovery and environments.
No, it's great. It's truly intense.
I mean, it's technical, and we need to get into all the nitty-gritty details and stuff like that. It would be nice if we can just have a top view and a high level view of things like we do with linters and formatters. For example, we have the language server protocol, we create a server, we can talk about it at the higher level. But environment, there are so many ways to discover, so many ways for everything. So we have to get into the nitty-gritty stuff to understand how it works really.
Oh yeah, and absolutely. I mean, it's also like one of the core parts, if not the core part of the extension. If we don't discover interpreters, then you can't really do much with the extension besides view files. So I feel that it's kind of unavoidable because it's a big part of the extension, or if not the biggest part.
Yes, I agree with that.
So, I mean, that's cool. It's working now. So that's great.
Yeah, it's at a pretty stable state right now, finally, after years of work.
Years? Really? No, it's only been like a year, right?
Yeah, 1 year.
Happy discoveryversary? Is that how you say that?
It's a thing now.
Yes, discoveryversary.
Happy discoveryversary, team. Good job.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Hartik, for talking to us about all of your wonderful work and all of what is coming up.
Yep. Thank you.
We always ask our guests two special questions. The first of them is, well, we are the Sad Python Girls Club podcast. Our brand is to be emos, or at least we were emos. So on that note, what is your favorite sad song, emo song?
That's a really good brand for you guys. My favorite, which comes up to mind right now, is the Wake Me Up, Eminence is good. Johnny Cash has great songs. But I would choose Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams. So the reason for choosing that, it goes to remind me of the simpler times in 10th class, 9th class. So I had a really good time. We had a really neat group in high school, and I had to leave my school early, 11th, 12th. I had to go to some other place so that I could eventually come to US. Yeah, that song reminds me of the great time that we had.
I love that the reason why this is your favorite sad song is because of your happy times. That's really happy. And the next and last question is, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
My favorite ice cream. I hated ice cream for a long time, but...
You what? I'm sorry. I gotta stop you right now. You what?
It's too cold. It hurts my teeth. But...
Okay, that is fair. That is fair. That is a valid excuse. Okay, moving on. Go ahead.
No. So, but I used to like, you know, the softy ice cream. Oh my God. If you can get an authentic one, it's the best. So it's similar to ice cream, but it's softer and less dense as the result of the air being introduced during freezing. So that tastes great. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to get many authentic version of that ice cream. Also, how can you say no to chocolate fudge? That's another favorite of mine.
I love it. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Thank you so much, Kim Adeline, for co-hosting with me.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you both.
And that's it for today's episode for the Sad Python Girls Club podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope to see you again soon.